It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Their experience in sports varies.
Of course, Vinny's got experience in the NFL, and I sucked at electric football.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
If you leave it now, come on, baby, sing it. Take away the biggest part. Nolan, get off the table. Chicago. Baby, please don't go. Hey, I'm glad we changed the imaging here on the show, by the way, to digress a little bit. Strong right turn. Vinny at 81.05.7 The Fan. Vinny's off today. He'll be joining us at 12:30 for Keys. One of mine would be like, hey, stop taking swings and misses at these challenges of yours, John Harbaugh. But as he said, hey, you can't get them wrong if you don't do it at all. Yeah, right. Maybe it's just me. Orioles were swinging and missing a lot, but they finally got one from Tony Taters as they salvaged the finale against the Giants. Ravens, Cowboys favorite. Orioles taking on the Tigers red hot. So this is going to be an interesting weekend of sports. Orioles going to the playoffs. Ravens, they dropped to 0-3. Hey, I'd say that might not be a reality for them in 2024. But a Chicago featured artist Friday, Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw joining us now as he does every Friday. From the Baltimore Banner, let's welcome in Jonas Schaefer. Jonas, what's up?
Morning, Bob. How's it going?
It's going all right. Look, you know, I know sometimes we have to buy what John Harbaugh is selling there from time to time. And a couple of days ago when he met with the media, rationalizing the decision to challenge things that based on the 8 bazillion TV angles. Look, I'm sitting on my ass at home drinking beer, watching it like everybody else. But at some point in time, are we buying John Harbaugh's explanation that sometimes, you know, you got to take a swing and hope for the you hit the fences there?
Yeah, to a degree. But I think you have to be mindful of the game flow, where you are. I mean, I think on the first challenge flag that he threw after Zay, the offense was just not prepared. So he figured he might as well just get the stoppage. Maybe there's a chance that there's a new angle that emerges and we get that completion and we're back rolling. But, you know, I think you have to be considerate of the fact that, you know, Devontae Adams is a magician and that catch is going to be made more times than not because it's Devontae Adams, and you have to be mindful that, well, if what you had the week before in Kansas City was a game that came down close to the wire and you needed another timeout there, then maybe you might need it this time again, even though it's a less talented team and you're playing it at home. So, you know, it's been a while since he's had a successful challenge, obviously, with the quality, I guess, of, you know, the NFL cameras and the officiating in general. Maybe it's just tougher across the league for these coaches to get these calls right. And obviously, I agree with him that sometimes you just need to throw a dart to see if something does emerge and shake out in your favor. But, you know, it's two games in a row now where they have not had a key timeout at the end of half that they needed to, and they've lost these games by the slimmest of margins. So why not give yourself the chance at the end of the game and just trust that what you see on the screen above your head is actually legit?
Jonas, how disappointing has the secondary been to you through two games?
In terms of production, definitely very, very disappointing. I think for whatever reason, they just have not been able to handle stuff before the snap. That was something I asked Zach Orr about yesterday. And he was like, yeah, we just haven't done a good enough job for all the people who thought that Trenton Simpson would come in and magically be as good as Patrick Queen in pass coverage. That has been definitely not the case. Roquan Smith looks a half step slow. Brandon Stevens, you know, is giving up the kind of completions that he wasn't giving up in training camp. Kyle Hamilton doesn't look like an all pro. Marcus Williams hasn't really done a whole lot. So I think probably, you know, the big plays that we just didn't see from this Ravens defense are now rearing their head in a very ugly way. I think probably the most illuminating stat, Bob, that I included in my preview this morning was, you know, over the first 4 weeks of last season, they allowed, I think, 2 completions of 20-plus air yards. They allowed 3 completions of 20-plus air yards in just the second half Sunday against the Raiders. So they need to find a way to tamp down on these big plays, or CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott are going to be having them for lunch on Sunday, too.
Jonah Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Nolan McGraw. Vinny's off on this Featured Artist Friday. Keep hearing a lot, Jonas, because you're there, about the lack of identity, air quotes, offensively. Is it that ambiguous that we don't really know what they want to be on the offensive side of the football? Are we maybe making more of it than it should be right now?
Yeah, I think this is probably one of my least favorite narratives, especially this early in the season. Like, I got it when they, you know, went away from the run in that Chiefs game. But listen, I mean, I know it hasn't translated to points, and John Harbaugh is keenly aware it hasn't translated to points, but they're first in the NFL in yards. You know, they've made efforts to, you know, be a team that either gets on its horse and tries to pass when it has to, or, you know, goes back in the saddle and tries to run the ball. I mean, you know, I think we would be having a very different conversation about this offense if that, you know, 3rd-and-1 got converted by you know, Charlie Kohler on that tush push. But instead it goes to 3rd-and-6 and they go 3 and out and boom, boom, boom. You know, there are discussions about why this offense just can't be a closer type offense. You know, never mind the fact that that drive had started with 2 straight runs to get them to that, you know, 3rd-and-1 spot. So I feel like, as with every other offense around the NFL, they're kind of flailing about in the dark, just trying to figure out what works, you know, trying to see how this rise of 2 high, you know, defenses is going to make life difficult or easy for them. I just have faith that with Todd Monken, Lamar, there's the chemistry there. You have good weapons, you know, at the receiver spots, if not great ones. And, you know, they should be able to figure things out. I think it's more important that they be flexible in certain situations than be rigid in their identity, because teams with rigid identities are dumb and stupid and stubborn, and you can't afford to have an offense like that in the modern NFL in 2024.
All right, health situation going into Sunday's game is what? It looks like pretty much everyone outside of Saleh was ready to rock and roll yesterday, including Adiza Isaac. He's practiced fully last 2 days. What could this possibly mean, Jonas, for his availability against the Cowboys this weekend?
Yeah, it's a good question, because you can be a full participant and still not be actually football ready. You know, I don't know if anyone missed who's on the current 53-man roster. I don't know if there's anyone who missed as much time as Adisa did, just because of all those hamstring injuries and everything. Maybe they'll need him because of David Ojabo showing up on that injury report with the quad injury. I don't know how serious that is. He looked like he wasn't in any great distress in the locker room yesterday. I think obviously the big question is, you know, how is Kyle Hamilton's back? We saw him at practice, but you know, you couldn't help but notice that when we were kind of hanging out in the locker room yesterday toward the end of availability, Kyle Hamilton walks in, sees that we're still in there, and then gets the hell out of town because he probably just doesn't want to answer questions about his injury. So obviously they have good depth in the secondary. If they want to move Marlon inside to deal with CeeDee Lamb, if he lines up there, they can obviously get away with Brandon Stevens and Jalen Armour Davis and maybe Nate Wiggins if he clears the concussion protocol and that neck injury is fine and good to go. But, yeah, I mean, all things considered, for an 0-2 team, they are in decent shape injury-wise.
Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner. Jonas, last thing for you. Looking at Dallas, they get trounced by New Orleans at home. Kamara had a monster game for them. If we're looking for a Ravens offensive identity, air quotes, what should it be against Big D's defense coming up 425 out there in Jerry World?
Yeah, just run the damn ball. This is a Cowboys run.
They allowed the 3rd or 4th most yards before contact per carry in the NFL in Week 2, which is a pretty glaring indictment of just how easily the Saints were able to establish the line of scrimmage the way that they wanted to. And now you have a Cowboys line that could be even more vulnerable, because Mazi Smith, who was, you know, a first or second round pick last year, has not practiced this week because of a back injury. They just put a reserve defensive tackle who I guess they were unhappy with on the injured reserve with a made-up wrist injury. Two of the other interior defensive linemen that they have are among PFF's lowest graded run defenders. So the way I see it, you are either running the ball, you know, for 5 or 6 yards a clip in that first or second quarter, or you're just dicing up the Cowboys on play action. I mean, I think Derek Carr went up for over 200 yards on just like 11 attempts of play action in that week two game. So if the Ravens, you know, can find a way to be productive with Daniel Faalele in there, despite him not being a you know, even serviceable run blocker, I think they should be able to kind of have their way with the Cowboys on early downs. And if they don't, that's really going to be a glaring indictment of what this Russian offense is right now.
Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, joins us every Friday. Jonas, always appreciate the time. Enjoy Dallas this weekend, and we'll talk to you next Friday, hopefully about the Ravens 1-2 getting ready for Buffalo, which should be an interesting game next Sunday night.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me on, Bob.
You got it, buddy. Here's Jonas Schaefer, everybody. We'll come back, whip around what happened in the world of sports last night. We'll show Shohei Ohtani did some historic stuff. We'll get into that. Heavyweight championship fight tomorrow. We'll talk about that and what happened in this day in Orioles and Ravens history. A memorable Ray Lewis play took place 15 years ago today, believe it or not. We'll talk about that. Then Keith Kavanaugh will preview Maryland Villanova coming up at the bottom of the...
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Down.
Vinny and Hades with brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes, the best crab cakes in Harford County. 1057 The Fan.
All right, Vinny and Hades, 1057 The Fan. Bob Hades, Nolan McGraw. Vinny's off today. It's Featured Artist Friday at Chicago. Anything you want to hear from them? Send your song request to the Plaza Sports text line at 410-583-1057. Shohei Ohtani became the first player in baseball history, Major League Baseball history, which has been around for billions of years. I mean, Fred Flintstone played baseball. That's how old this thing is. 6 for 6, 3 homers, 2 stolen bases, 50-50 club, first ever, 10 ribbies. Actually, he's 51-51. Incredible performance. Dodgers blow out the Marlins 20-4. But we have seen this guy be transcendent for a long, long time. And now, for the first time in his career, he's going to be a national stage guy in October, because the Dodgers are going to win their division, even though the Padres are making it interesting. He's going to be in the playoffs for the first time ever. And the Angels had he and Mike Trout for a few seasons, and they were never more than, at best, mediocre. And now, for the first time in his career, he's going to get to be on a big stage. And last night, he did it, and did it in a big way. A lot of people are saying this could be the greatest individual performance in a game in the history of baseball. Okay, it's in the conversation. I'm still leaning towards hitting 2 home runs in a game in which you throw a no-hitter. It's pretty strong. But this was a brilliant, brilliant performance. So, Shohei Ohtani, congratulations to you. And who knows, as Nolan said earlier, Nolan, he starts throwing that baseball next year. Can he even top what he's doing now? You never thought. Could he get any better? I think the answer is maybe yeah.
Well, just having 6 at-bats in a 9-inning game, that alone just doesn't happen. So, you know, it was a huge offensive day for everyone in the Dodgers lineup. But 6 for 6 in a 9-inning game, that's something that might not ever happen again.
Yeah, I think Rennie Stanton had 7 hits way back when for the Pirates in a 9-inning game. But, hey, Skip Schumacher, manager of the Marlins, didn't pitch around and say, hey, be a disservice to baseball and, you know, we'll make some history. Hey, Kyle Stowers and Connor Norby played in that game, and they both had a knock. Wasn't enough, though. But think about it. They scored one less run than the Orioles did yesterday and lost by 16. Orioles won the game. And that's all that matters. Terps coming up tomorrow. We'll talk about this in a couple of minutes. Keith Kavanaugh, 17.5-point favorites against Villanova. The Wildcats are undefeated. They edged the Towson Tigers last week. So Keith will give us an idea of what Maryland has in store for them at noon down at CQ Stadium. Jets win Monday, or it was Thursday night football. Aaron Rodgers, 2 touchdowns as they blow out the New England Patriots. 7 sacks. This Will McDonald, the fourth. 5.5 sacks in his last 2 games. We'll talk more about that with Eric Edholm when he joins us for NFL Lunch coming up at 1 o'clock. There is an IBF heavyweight championship fight tomorrow as former champ Anthony Joshua and Daniel Dubois, or DuBose, whichever you prefer, will meet for the vacant title, 12 rounds. It's in London. So if you have DAZN and you want to pay for it, it's day boxing. I'm loving every minute. I'm just going to be in the 80s tomorrow. Bob's going to be in his happy zone. Tomorrow, you got Orioles during the day. You got college football at the yin-yang. You got a heavyweight title fight. What's to complain about? But that's tomorrow. Vacant title was stripped from Alexander Usyk, who has beaten both of these guys, by the way. So they were the mandatories. They stripped the title. He's fighting Tyson Fury in a couple of months. So there you go. But if you like heavyweight championship boxing, remember the good old days when there was one champ? Or even when there were just two, you knew who they were? Now most people could name 3, 4, 5 heavyweights total, much less the champ. But that's boxing did that to itself. I'm one of the few saps, I guess, that still follows it. Actually, they still get in the millions in the pay-per-view stuff, but it's nowhere near as mainstream as it was in the good old days. And yes, Nolan, some of those good old days were better than current days. How about 1973, this day in Orioles history, September 20th, in Detroit, Bobby Grinch, Don Baylor had 2 ribbies each. Jim Palmer, complete game shutout, his 22nd win of the year on his way to his first Cy Young. 9-zip Orioles on their way to the AL East Championship. We've talked about it before. Jim Palmer said it before. 2 of the 3 years he won the Cy Young, didn't he make the All-Star team? And I believe he called Darryl Johnson a dope or something like that in 76. But we'll get into that at a later date. 1974, a year later, Fenway. Don Baylor, Boot Powell went deep. Ross Grimsley, who was part of Rick Wise's history. 7 strong, picks up his 18th win. Orioles edge the Red Sox 2-1 as they come from behind in the East and win the division. Both years, unfortunately, lost to the A's in the ALCS. 1997, Oriole Park Camden Yards, wire-to-wire Orioles beat the Tigers 12-8. Orioles hit 4 home runs. Chris Hoyles, B.J. Surhoff, Robbie Alomar, and Mike Bordick. Bordick muscling it up late in the season. Nerio Rodriguez got the win in relief of Rick Krivda. 12-8 Orioles. And on this day in Ravens history, 15 years ago today, I was at De La Rosa's down there in Canton. Ravens taking on the then San Diego Chargers. It's late in the game. San Diego's trying to pull it out. It's 4th down. Darren Sproles gets the ball, and this happened.
Oh, my. Hit in the backfield. It's timing it perfectly. Who else but the many-time All-Pro Ray Lewis, almost as if he knew what was coming. He charged right up the middle and into the arms of the ball carrier to deny the Chargers.
The late, great Dick Enberg on the call. That was 4th down. Ray Lewis plugged the hole, shall we say. 5-yard loss. Flacco took a knee, and the Ravens got out of there 31-26. The hard thing to believe, it was 15 years ago. It seems like it was only yesterday. But Ray Lewis, one of the great players in the history of the National Football League, doing what those people do. Great players making great plays in crucial situations. When we come back, shift gears, talk Terps. Maryland football 2-1. All right, came from behind to beat Virginia. You got Villanova. That Michigan State loss still stings almost two weeks later. But we'll look ahead to the Wildcats and what's happening with Kelvin Willard's men's basketball team recruiting. All right, off to a great start. We'll see what it's looking like for the 2024-2025 Turtles. They're in Joe Lunardi's bracketology, but as an 11 seed, they're on the outskirts of the way too early top 25s. Is there hope for this season after a debacle of a 2023-2024? Find out, Dolan McGraw. News from the Nets coming up top of the hour. Buy or sell 12:15. Vinny's going to join us via the phones for his keys to victory. Then it's the American League East report. Hey, for one day at least, Seattle did the Orioles a favor. Regular season edition coming up at 6. Me and Mike Bordick going to be live from Pickles Pub. Inside Access will be there starting at 2. So the boys will be there, Ken, Jason, and Landlin. So we're going to have a big old party tonight. We got Chuck Bucks to spend. Yeah, I'm taking home 5 cheeseburgers. That's it. We're all eating good tonight. Live from Pickles Pub. Orioles, on a most important note, trying to handle their business against the hottest team, arguably, in baseball. In Detroit, Ravens taking on the Cowboys as 1-point favorites. Talk more about that as the show rolls on. But let's talk about what's happening tomorrow down in College Park, football-wise, for Mike Locksley, looking to get to 3-1. The Villanova Wildcats coming to town from TerrapinTimes.com. Keith Cavanaugh. Keith, good morning. What's up?
Bob, I mean, Hoops Haney, first things first, you must be in Hoops heaven now that UCLA and Southern Cal are both coming to Xfinity Center this year for men's hoop, as you released yesterday in the new schedule.
Yeah, well, if it was Marcus Johnson and Paul Westphal coming for the ride, I'd be all about this, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, Gail Goodrich, Bill Walton, Kareem, a few others. But
Cliff Robinson, remember Cliffy, the original Cliff Robinson?
Oh, my God.
USA with the headband.
Not to mention Villanova and Syracuse this year, and then the future series with Virginia and Georgetown home and home. So getting back to old school OOC scheduling is some great things to look forward to and help pack the gymnasium there. But as far as Villanova, unless Howie Long and Brian Westbrook are walking in that door tomorrow, I don't think the Terps have much to worry about. Go out, take care of business. Don't play down to competition. It won't be as lopsided as a UConn game. You know, obviously, Villanova is an FCS favorite. They're 3-0. Now they beat Youngstown State, Colgate, and should have lost last week to Towson, save for Towson's 2 last-second field goal attempt gaffes. Not much offensively. Pretty solid defense, only giving up 11 points a game. But, this should be a skull drudgeon or whatever you call it as well, but maybe not the epic proportion of UConn. But what really has me poised here right now as we project, next week with Indiana, who just skull drudged, I'm sorry, that's the word, UCLA last week, though they're not very good this year. We need to see 2 good halves. We need to see not 7 penalties in the first half like at Virginia. We need to see them make adjustments quicker. So props in the second half when Maryland got back to tempo on offense and they brought more pressure. Calandro for Virginia looked like a nine-year-old high school quarterback running around in your backyard with a Nerf football. So, they didn't handle business in the first half. Kudos to turning it around the second half. But you're not going to be able to put up first halves like that now going forward, mind you, with the exception of maybe tomorrow. Because everyone in the Big Ten, look at Cignetti, what he's doing at Indiana, what a hire. They've all gotten better. So eliminate the penalties, the self-inflicted. I'm not sure why they started that Virginia game in the 5 or 6 drop offense with Billy Edwards. They're best when they're 2 to 3 step drop back, quick slants, screens, and get going. But they totally abandoned the run in the first half. They were going with these longer developing pass plays, and he was either off the mark. It looked like he had the yips, or he did have some receiver drops. But props for them recovering in the second half. But you can't do that now going forward for the majority of the rest of the schedule.
Any concerns with the running game or lack thereof last couple of weeks there, Keith?
Well, yeah, I mean, they abandoned it last week until the second half. They need to use a short passing game to set up the run. They have 3 very capable backs. I think Ray and McDonald make you miss in a phone booth more than Roman Hemby, who's a more between the tackles grinder. I'd like to see Ray and McDonald get a few more reps. All the receivers, Felton, I think he still leads the nation in every receiving category conceivable. he just finds a way of getting open and making plays after the catch. He's been sensational. You know, the lines are still going to be an issue. You know, Villanova has a fairly stout for their level offensive line. Watkins, the quarterback, is a veteran. He's not going to beat you with his arm. Averill, their running back, is kid brother of the Terp receiver, Averill, from Montgomery County. He's averaging, I think, 6 yards per clip. But their offense is pretty modest. And now Towson, mind you, is pretty good this year. Didn't 3 weeks ago, they took Cincinnati to the third quarter in like a 7-point game out there. So, you know, they're not going to be as easy as UConn, but go out, take care of business. They're averaging, what, 9 penalties a game right now, Maryland? Got to cut that in half. We shouldn't be seeing these same mistakes. And then I'd like to see Billy more in the RPO game where he can be very dangerous. So they kind of had an inverted offense in the first half, got away from what they've been doing well in the first couple of games. But fortunately, they adjusted second half.
Keith Cavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com, joining us on the program. Bob Henney with you on this Featured Artist Friday. Ty Felt looking explosive through the first 3 weeks of the season. And obviously, Keith, you knew that he had the skills, but, you know, got caught up behind some of the more fancier names, especially a couple of years ago. But what about this bust-out season for Ty Felton here?
Yeah, and if you think about, you know, Preston Howard, their tight end, is very dangerous. He returned to play last week from injury. But you still got, you know, you know, Octavian Smith. All these guys are like mini and Prather, a larger version. Felton's all, you know, great escapability, catch, make you miss, yards after the catch. Felton is playing at such a high level right now, and he's Billy's go-to guy, but just finds a way to get it done. Great space. Billy, you know, by and by, given the issues with the offensive line, has been getting pretty ample time. But I'd still like to see them get back to more quick developing plays. Get him the ball 2 or 3 yards over the line, let him go. But he's the next great Maryland receiver, and he's going to be a high-round draft pick.
All right, Keith, let's get back to hoops men's, if you don't mind. You brought up the schedule. Big Ten announced, you know, times to be determined, but some fancy names coming to College Park in Maryland, going to face some fancy names. But I know what, media days in less than a month. Give us a status report on recruiting and how the practice sessions have gone, because last year's season was a colossal disappointment. As we've talked about, right now they're on the outskirts of top 25's preseason. They're in Lenardi's, they're 11 seed, I believe. Believe playing in the first four. Is there more upside this year than, say, the anticipation a year ago going into the team coming off an NCAA tournament berth but laying a colossal egg?
Yeah, and like I mentioned last week, one poll has Derek Queen as the fifth best big man in the country already. He hasn't even suited up. So you combine him with Juju down low, and you still got Geronimo, first guy off the bench inside. Pierce is, you know, still developing, but coming around, he can give you some serviceable minutes. But you're going to have more inside punch. Everything's not going to have to be relying upon Juju to try to get it done, and he has his struggles still. Now he'll have a partner down there. You know, Derek's really got in better shape, still a little ways to go. He's still a young pup physically, but he's really come around. But now you've added 3 or 4 38, 39, or 40% plus 3-point shooters, and are all of their portal guys. You've added Gillespie for 3-year point guard, better shooter than Jameer, but not the athlete. And you've added in Selton Miguel, who is probably the biggest surprise of the summer. He's Des Wells all over again. But, you know, athletic, nasty, tough, aggressive wing player who can combo between that 2 and 3. So, you know, DHS, you know, he's got to really pick up his game if he wants to stay the starter there at the 3. But you got bona fide shooters. You still got Chance Stevens coming off a redshirt year, and his trademark is supposed to be as a 3-point marksman. So things are going well, knock on wood. There haven't been any injuries. Still waiting on the point guard to commit, Chris Jeffrey, still a lean to Maryland out of Mount Zion in Atlanta, Maryland, the 4-star. And then Jordan Scott, who we mentioned last week, the 6'7 small forward from Southlake. Grant Hill, Joey Beard, who's the son of you know, Chris Winterscott. He's still a lean 4-star. Probably along with adding one more, they're going to save one for the spring for a portal. Everyone has to do that. It's definitely Willard's philosophy. So you've got a great start with Marcus, the first pop, and then you're probably going to add these two guys. Of course, Amari Witherspoon committed to Pitt last week as we spoke, and all of a sudden you went from 3 to 4 stars like the next day. But he was out of St. John's, was going to him or Jeffrey. So hopefully we'll hear soon on Jeffrey. I think the women have a couple official visitors coming this weekend. The weather report's supposed to be better. Hopefully football can get 28,000 to 30,000 in the stands. It's a noon game, which is often tough. It's parents' weekend, so we'll see. But yeah, all is good, and I'm very pumped for both men's and women's basketball season to start. I mean, 8 additions on the women's side, 7 portals, 1 JUCO, and what was it, 6 or 7 on the men's side when you combine them all. So some more firepower and some more inside oomph.
Keith Cavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com. Always great to hear from you. Enjoy the rest of your Friday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bob. You too, buddy.
There's Keith Cavanaugh, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back. Funhouse, Nolan McGraw, News from the Nest. Got a lot of people to hear from, Ravens related. You don't want to miss that. Buy or sell, where's our Friday money? Can we afford crustaceans and beers on what's going to be a beautiful Saturday? We'll find out in a few minutes. Vinny's keys to victory with Vinny coming up at 12:30. And then the American League East report and beyond as Shohei Ohtani made history. But Seattle did the Orioles a favor. Can the Orioles do themselves a favor this weekend against the Tigers? They're the hands of the New Orleans Saints when that game was over by halftime. Orioles get a dramatic win yesterday against the Giants. Now the Tigers come to town. We got your American League East report coming up around 12:45, and then we're going to have Jacob Calvin-Meyer from the Baltimore Sun at 1:30 to preview this, and then look at that road trip through New York and Minnesota. New York's already clinched a playoff spot, trying to close in on the division. Twins right now fighting for their playoff lives. Believe it or not, Tigers all up in there, tied with Minnesota for that last spot. But let's bring Nolan McGraw in. Nolan, what is up on this Featured Artist Friday with you?
Well, it's actually something we talked about off the air, but it's funny to laugh about it in hindsight, obviously, because the Orioles got the win yesterday. But I don't know if anyone noticed on Santander's walk-off home run, you know, great call from Kevin Brown and everyone there on Masson. But in the background, you could hear the home run siren at Camden Yards. It seemed like it went off a little early.
A little premature.
Ball was still in the air. And, of course, this was not a no-doubter home run that was 10 rows deep or planted on Utah Street. I mean, this thing barely got over the grounds crew shed out there in right field. So I didn't quite pick up on it in real time, but seeing somebody's cell phone footage that they posted on social media, you could definitely hear it. Somebody had their finger on the button ready to go there.
Yeah, and that thing stayed in the air forever. So it wasn't like a no-doubter like Conforto's was earlier in the game. That thing was a missile out in the right field. But yeah, a little premature. And then the dude with the glove.
Mm-hmm. Look, gotta, man, come down with that.
Yeah, I'm gonna shame you, and I'm sure you're a nice guy and a fine American. You bring a glove to a game and you got an opportunity to use it, you gotta make the play, bro. And I thought he was gonna interfere with the ball.
Right, that
but
was
once
the other
it,
concern.
Yeah, once it hits the roof, it's it. That's a home run. Not Jeffrey Mayer reaching out into the warning track, and Richie Garcia didn't have the balls to call the interference, and I'll go to my grave saying he wussed out on the call. Richie Garcia did in that game. But you take a glove to a game. Look, I'm 59 years old. I'd look like an a-hole bringing a baseball glove to a game, but you can bet your short ones that I would have caught that ball if it's coming to me.
I'm kind of anti-glove. I think if there's a cutoff age, obviously, if you're a kid, go ahead, bring your glove to the game. But grown man with a glove? I don't care if you're sitting in the outfield barehanded.
Barehanded?
Yeah.
Like the one guy did a few weeks back up
or
in
take
the
your
right
hat
field.
Off.
Yeah, he had
hat.
A beer in his hand, snatched it out of the air. That was an impressive play. Or CNL Perez it.
Yeah. That's almost more impressive.
Yeah, well, the sad part is sometimes he gives up more home runs than he catches, but that's another story for another day. We have time for a fun house, or are we bailing on this one?
We'll
here?
Do a few here.
Let's do it.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that Quick Draw.
105.7 The Fan.
This texter says, I'm not sure if it'll work out standings-wise, but it would be great to see the Orioles clinch a playoff spot at home this weekend. Put the Tigers to bed. Hope that you're still within striking distance of New York on the other side, but priority number one, just securing a spot.
Yeah, just win your games, and then other things will take care of itself. I mean, Detroit's on fire, and as we talked about earlier, they're going to miss Skubal again, but they lost 2 out of 3 in Detroit last week, with that still being part of their reality. Just stack your wins. See what Kansas City's got in store for themselves if they've lost 4 in a row. Just handle your business, and then chips will fall. Chips will fall where they may. But the Orioles have put themselves in this situation. Now try to navigate your way. At least secure a home field advantage in the wild card round.
Another one here says, assuming the Orioles make the playoffs as a wild card, do you think they'll move Albert Suarez to the bullpen, maybe even for a high leverage situation, at least in that first round?
Best of three. And it all depends on how the rotation is going to shake out here in the next 9 days. Like, Burns is pitching today, which means, let me do math here, Nolan. Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. He'll pitch in New York on Wednesday. So he would line up for a wild card game one. You go with your top three dudes there. Is it Burns, Eflin? But Eflin's pitching in front of Burns right now.
So the way it would shake out...
Bun would get a start? Is that what we're doing
if
here?
If there's no other alterations to the five-man rotation between now and the end of the season, your pitchers for that final series against Minnesota would be Povich, Suarez, Kramer. So that would leave, like you said, Burns for potentially game one, Eflin for game two, or vice versa, because Eflin is ahead of Burns. So maybe he's one, Burns is two.
And if he gets the three, all hands on deck.
Right.
So that's what we're doing. Wow, good job, Nolan.
ESPN. Thank you, ESPN.
Oh, word.
Their forecast.
There you go.
And we'll do one more here, this one on the Ravens. Texter says, the defense has to learn to do things Zach Orr's way, not Mike McDonald's. That transition has some holdups that come along with it. Not placing the blame here on Hamilton, Roquan, or any player. It's the defensive coordinator to blame.
Or... bring a little more consistency to the equation. Now, you're putting Malik Harrison in situations where he can't succeed. I mean, the missed tackles, but the blown assignments. I mean, Hamilton in week one against Kansas City. I guess it was Humphrey in the Raiders game last week where he was looking around going, what the hell's going on here as Adams caught that short TD pass. I mean, be consistent. Another key. Vinny will give us his 12:30, but, you know, no blown assignments. Tighten it up a little bit. And Zach Orr learning on the fly. 2 years ago at this time, everybody was talking about how Mike McDonald sucks. Look at Mike McDonald now. He's 2-0 in Seattle as the head coach. And give it time. Get it together. You got the personnel to make it happen. Just get her done. It's Vinny at Haiti, 105.7 The Fan. News from the Nets. Speaking of Zach Orr, we're going to hear from him, among others, when we come back. Let's count that dough, 12:15. Buy or sell. Talk about sports subjects going into this busy late September weekend. And then Vinny's keys to victory. Then we got the American League East report. It is an interesting 9 games left in the season. Only 3 series left for every team. Kansas City's got San Francisco. We'll look at the standings and the schedule and all that fun. Then Eric Edholm's going to have some NFL lunch with us at 1 o'clock.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.